This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to Pacific Beat. My name is Jordan Fennell. Today on the show, the United States government has officially returned more than 100 artifacts to the people of Papua New Guinea. And the repatriation has put a renewed focus on just how many other artifacts around the world may have been taken from PNG illegally. You'll hear more on this coming up shortly. And a village on Tanna Island in Vanuatu has developed a traditional song and dance to ward off coronavirus.
We're not worried about catching this illness, coronavirus, because we can use our local tools, our custom, our local food. Like I said earlier, the spirit gave us this song, so when you hear it, you feel better.
But health authorities fear that these custom performances are also spreading misinformation about the coronavirus. That's coming up in around 40 minutes. But first, as investigations continue into an explosion that killed two men in Solomon Islands, the bomb-clearing aid organisation they worked for has suspended operations.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
The Norwegian non-government organisation that helps to clear landmines and unexploded bombs in countries around the world, including Solomon Islands, says keeping explosives in a residential area goes against company practices. The statement comes after an Australian man, Trent Lee, and Luke Atkinson from the UK, were killed when a bomb exploded in their office and residence in an upmarket part of the Solomon's capital, Honiara. The pair worked for Norwegian People's Aid, and its director of Mine Action and Disarmament has told Pacific Beat he's at a loss to explain how explosives and munitions came to be on the site. From Honiara, Evan Wasuka reports.
The NGO Norwegian People's Aid operates in more than 30 countries around the world, many of them war-torn with active fighting. Removing landmines, unexploded bombs and other munitions is naturally dangerous work that can lead to death on the field. But this week's bomb blast that left two workers dead has seen the organisation enter new territory. Per Brevik is head of Mine Action and Disarmament for the organisation.
I think the special circumstances here is that most accidents do happen under field operations or under active clearance of items, whether it's landmines or other types of explosive remnants of war. But the special circumstances that are difficult to in a way accept here is that it happened in the residential part, in our residence in Honiara.
Solomon Islands police have removed the remaining unexploded World War II bombs from the site. They're investigating why explosives were there in the first place, in the house that the NGO also uses as its office. It's just 20 metres away from other neighbours.
Under no circumstances are there supposed to be unexploded ordnance or any types of explosives or ammunition in our office, premises or residences in any program. And of course, the one in Solomon Island being no exception to that.
That's part of your standard procedures, is it?
Yes, we do follow all international standards, such as the International Ammunition Technical Guidelines, International Mine Action Standards, and other relevant international standards. And I mean, we globally operate in countries such as Syria and Iraq in fairly challenging environments. And as an organization, we would like to think we hold ourselves to the highest of standards. And that is part of why it's so difficult to understand and accept the facts that we are presented with from Solomon Islands.
Despite the war in the Pacific ending 75 years ago, the Solomon Islands still has remnants of the conflict littered across the country. The Norwegian People's Aid arrived in the Solomons last year to help map out where such munitions were located so that special Solomon Islands police team could then destroy or remove unexploded explosives. John Rodstead is a researcher for SafeGround, an Australian organisation that campaigns against landmines and munitions and has worked in Solomon Islands.
So the only clearance effort that's taking place up there is the Royal Solomon Islands Police EOD team, which do an extraordinary job. And this new Norwegian NGO, Norwegian People's Aid, that's come up and begun doing it, begun that process of a national survey. So first you survey before you clear.
As part of Solomon Islands' preparation to host the region's biggest sporting event, the 2023 Pacific Games, there's been the push for bomb clearance before heavy construction work can start to build new stadiums, roads and infrastructure. But that work will have to continue without the Norwegian People's Aid Group. It has temporarily suspended its operations and will hold its own inquiry after Solomon Islands police carry out their own investigations. Here's Per Brevik again.
So we would, of course, hope that the project can continue because it is an important project. But that is, of course, also not entirely under our control, if you understand what I mean. We will have to await the investigation and the response from Solomon Island authorities, etc., to see if there are any consequences to the project.
And as everyone searches for answers, Safe Grounds' John Rodsted says the tragic incident has put renewed focus on the fact that there's more work to be done in places like Solomon Islands and other parts of the Pacific. He wants to see countries involved in World War II, including Australia, do more.
In World War II... finished in the Pacific 75 years ago, and very little has been done through all of the Pacific to clear up this dangerous legacy. And it simply needs investment by governments. And there are people out there who will do the work and will take it away, but they've got to be able to afford to do that. So it really comes back to governments being interested and investing in the money that it will take to actually make these countries safe once and for all.
John Rodsted from Safe Ground, an anti-landmines and munitions organisation, and the reporter in Solomon Islands was Evan Wasuka.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
The future of rugby union in Tonga is teetering on the brink, with the battle for control of the sport in the islands still unresolved. Essential funding from World Rugby has been suspended indefinitely, and there's real concern that Tonga's status as a Tier 2 nation alongside Fiji and Samoa could be at risk. As Richard Hewitt reports, a slide into Tier 3 would relegate Tonga to development status, where there is much less money to go round.
Tonga, though, still pour forward. What have they got left? The little kick. Oh, brilliantly taken. Zane Capelli scores. Have Tonga got time to win this game?
At the World Cup last year, Tonga came desperately close to toppling Tier 1 nation France. But since then, there's been little for Tongan followers to cheer. The immediate future of rugby in the kingdom rests on a tripartite deal waiting to be signed by the government, World Rugby and the Tongan Rugby Union. It would allow an interim management team to take over the running of the game until long-standing governance issues linked to the current administration can be resolved. The governance process is one that all the Pacific Island rugby unions have been through, but Tonga is the last, and a solution is proving hard to find, with rival factions at odds and an ongoing battle in the courts as long-time interim chief executive Feo Vunipolo seeks to hold on to power. For men's national coach Totai Kefu, the situation is deeply frustrating.
This time Tonga pick it up. Oh, very deft by Fiver. That's not bad. It's a bobbling ball for the Ainu. Now a chance for Kupavuna to stretch his legs. Maxime Medal should have it covered, but no! Thunderous run. It's going to be the try. And it's Maliatoa Hingano who scores.
Funding from World Rugby has been suspended indefinitely, and as a result, for now at least, the man who led the team at the last World Cup is out of a job.
We had a debrief in the US after the World Cup in November, December last year, and it was my understanding that World Rugby and the Tongan local rugby organisation were happy with the results. There were some numbers there that pointed that we were doing okay and we were improving. So they were very happy with me re-signing for another couple of years, and I was happy to do that. There was one person within the organisation that didn't want me to re-sign. So basically, earlier this year, our governance had to provide annual compliance records, audits and all that kind of stuff. And our union hasn't been able to do that. So we're under some kind of suspension. Once we provide those, then we can move forward and hopefully I can re-sign. But at the moment, I'm just in limbo.
Should the proposed tripartite deal be signed, then Kefu would be back in the game, as some, if not all, the available funding from World Rugby should be unlocked. And the hope is the deal will be done, as one person who can't sign, or more likely would refuse to sign, is CEO Vunipolo, because he's in England right now and unable to return to Tonga anytime soon. But with him or without him, if the agreement isn't ratified, there is a real fear that Tonga could find themselves dropping down from Tier 2 to Tier 3 in amongst the developing nations with limited funding and no room to negotiate. And Totai Kefu says that would be a disaster.
Definitely. If we do slip to number 3, we could be in a little bit of trouble. The majority want to get back on par with World Rugby's demands, and we're trying to do that. So hopefully it doesn't come to that.
But as it stands, and I appreciate there's still some time to go before you're due to play Samoa in World Cup qualifying time, but as it stands, what I'm being told is that Tonga couldn't afford to take part in that game.
Yeah, at the moment we couldn't. They've stifled all funding until our governance issues are dealt with.
Basically, there would be no money to buy the players' kit, medical supplies or medical insurance. And it's not just the World Cup Tonga would miss out on. They're due to play in the qualifying repechage alongside Samoa next year for a place in the Olympic Rugby Sevens tournament. And there is a group of All Blacks with Tongan heritage led by Charles Piatau who are ready to join the Tongan lineup. And to complete an unwanted trifecta, if the Tongan Rugby Union can't move forward under an interim administration, then Totai Kefu says Tongan players could well miss out on any involvement with a Pacific Islands Super Rugby franchise that looks likely to finally become a reality next year.
We've missed so many opportunities that we could have been involved in over the last 4 years during my tenure. And it's just been a lack of urgency, a lack of competence and patience. At the moment, there are more good people than not. And it still seems to be things just dragging on. I'm remaining patient and positive, and a lot of good people doing some good work behind the scenes.
Just like arch rivals Fiji and Samoa, rugby is the lifeblood for many people in Tonga. Up to now, Totai Kefu says every attempt has been made to deal with the governance crisis out of public view. But with the sport in Tonga approaching the point of no return, fans will be demanding answers.
There's a lot of things that happen behind closed doors, and as a coach and as fellow administrators, we've tried to shelter our supporters and the general public from a lot of what's happened. We've had issues all throughout my tenure, the 4 years. I could write a book. But we keep positive, we move on, and we just hope. Oceania have helped us a lot over the last couple of months, and they're assisting with what World Rugby needs. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. We're all keeping positive.
In terms of getting important documents signed, it just seems to be taking forever, and it's reaching this critical point now where it looks like World Rugby are just going to wash their hands of it.
You know, you throw COVID in there, you throw some incompetence. There's a group of people there that are trying to stall things. We're doing our absolute best. We've been given plenty of time. But in Tonga, things don't happen quickly. We hope that we can sort something out soon.
Totai Kefu, currently coach in waiting for the Tongan men's rugby team, ending that report from Richard Hewitt. And the hope is an all-important tripartite agreement on a way forward for the TRU will be signed in Nuku'alofa this evening.
Hey, it's Rock and Cav.
Join Rock and Cav every Thursday night across the Pacific
for Can You Be More Pacific?
Each week, they'll have their own unique take on all things sport.
Daniel Tupou scored his 100th try.
Pacific Islander to score 100 tries in the NRL, that's special, man.
And to be as humble as he is,
his middle name is Humility.
How do you say that in Tongan?
Humility.
Starts October 8, 6 p.m. Thursday nights, PNG time.
My name's Jordan Fennell. You're with me here on Pacific Beat. Let's have some midweek music for your Wednesday. This is a new one from Tio. He's an artist out of Vanuatu, and this is a beautiful one to ease yourself into the morning with. It's called Live Easy.
Tennis. People they wanna we're blessed by you me connect to oh, oh, oh. Life he come tennis. People they wanna we're blessed by you me connect to oh, oh, oh. He more good you me stop living.
That was Tio with Live Easy, and that's a song off of his new album, which is coming out this Friday. And if you liked that, well, we've got some more music out of Vanuatu coming up soon. You're going to hear the story about a village on the island of Tanna that has created a traditional song and dance to try and ward off coronavirus. That story will be coming up in about half an hour. But now it's time to find out all the latest weather news from across the region. And to do that, I'm joined by Neville Coop, the director of Nandraki Weather. Good morning, Neville.
Hi, good morning.
Neville, for the past couple of days, we've heard a lot about rainfall, but can we expect any today?
Yeah, look, there is still a bit of rain hanging about the central parts around the dateline. Still raining this morning in Tonga, in Nuku'alofa and Niue. And some of that is also pushed north into the northern parts of Tonga and also across the Samoas, American and Independent, where there's perhaps even a thunderstorm later today. And there's likely to see some of that rain push across the southern Cooks later. Not there yet. It's still fairly bright and sunny at the moment, but by evening I expect that they'll probably have some rain. Other than that, pretty good outside of the equator, some spotty thunderstorms around the Solomons, but Melanesia generally bright and clear. Nothing much really to get excited about there. We do have a few thunderstorms about the Micronesian Islands. Again, nothing of any concern. There is a hurricane, new hurricane in the northeast Pacific coming off the coast of Mexico. That system's quite intense, but fairly small. It may push further west towards the Hawaiian Islands later in the weekend. It's got a long way to go, but we'll be watching that one over the coming days.
Wonderful. Well, Neville, thank you so much for that update.
You're welcome, and happy equinox. Equinox happened overnight. The sun has moved south of the equator, so summer is on its way.
That's right. Happy equinox to you too and to everyone else out there for those longer days. Looking forward to them. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was Neville Coop, the director of Nandraki Weather. And if you want to find out any other weather news from across the region, you can head over to Facebook and search Nandraki Weather. I like to spell it sometimes. It's N-A-D-R-A-K-I. Now to find out all the latest news from across the region, and I'm joined by Richard Hewitt for that. Good morning, Richard.
Morning, Jordan.
Richard, let's start with the latest developments on COVID-19 in the Pacific, and unfortunately there are some more deaths to report from French Polynesia.
Yeah, that is the case. Three deaths, in fact, a woman in her 60s, two men in their late 70s. Takes the total number of deaths in the French territory now to five, and case numbers have passed 1,300. And sadly, there are deaths to report from Guam as well. Two there, a 65-year-old man and a woman aged 52. So the total number of deaths in the US territory is up to 37 now, and confirmed case numbers stand at 2,190. That's a rise of 43 after the latest round of 474 tests. No fresh news from Papua New Guinea. It's been pretty quiet on the COVID-19 front so far this week. Case numbers still standing at 517, we believe. But the Health Minister, Jelta Wong, has responded to concerns from the pandemic response controller, David Manning, over testing rates. Mr Wong says a big part of the problem is a shortage of testing kits, but he is hopeful more will be arriving in PNG by the end of the month.
Meanwhile, a study by a leading neuroscientist in the United States is pointing to an interesting connection between COVID-19 and dengue fever.
Yeah, this is a study by Professor Miguel Nicolelis at Duke University in North Carolina. It hasn't actually been published yet, but details have been published via the Reuters news agency. And Professor Nicolelis has analysed an outbreak in Brazil and found a link between the spread of the coronavirus there and past outbreaks of dengue fever. Now, the suggestion is that exposure to dengue may provide some level of immunity to COVID-19. Now, of course, dengue is common in many parts of the Pacific, so if this research stands up, it may perhaps explain, to some degree at least, why some of the island countries have managed to remain virus-free up to now. And in PNG, it could be one reason why the predicted explosion of coronavirus numbers is yet to happen. So we await more details on that research.
Yeah, very interesting. But switching gears now to some election news. We've been following the Bougainville election for a while now. What's the latest on that presidential election? Is the finish line in sight?
Yes, it is, as the battle for the top job is a two-horse race now, with the front runner. It's been the front runner throughout Israeli, the former commander of the Bougainville Revolutionary Army, Ishmael Torawama, way ahead with nearly 49,700 votes, while his last remaining rival, Simon de Marino, trails by more than 17,000. The votes accrued by the third-place candidate, Peter Siamalili, who's the last or the most recent to drop out. He had around 23,500 votes. So Mr. Torawama only needs to secure fewer than 3,000 of that number in terms of preferences to become president. So I think we can expect an outcome probably today, but I think the official result is more likely to be announced tomorrow.
That's right. And we'll keep everyone updated that across ABC Radio Australia. But now to some news from the sporting scene and significant developments in Tonga's NRL battle to win back control of rugby league in the kingdom.
Yeah, it would appear that battle has swung dramatically in the Tonga NRL's favour. Their case against the world ruling body, the IRL, the International Rugby League, was due to be heard at the Court of Arbitration for Sport today, in fact. But now that hearing has been vacated and rescheduled for early to mid-December. The secretary of the TNRL, lawyer William Edwards, says the IRL's case for expelling them in the first place is beginning to fall apart.
What they're agreeing to at the moment is we didn't fail to hold an AGM. There was reasons for that. That was beyond our control. We didn't fail to do the audit. We were doing the audit. Again, that was beyond our control, how come it took so long. And that the NRL refused to give us any evidence and they seized our funds, which they didn't know about. So a whole lot of factors that came up when we gave the evidence and we had documents to prove it, like emails and everything, they got a shock. They didn't expect it. And as our lawyer had said to us all along, when we asked them what are they investigating, they could have given us that information, but they chose not to. They've been very secretive and saying, oh, but you didn't cooperate. And our lawyer's saying to me, they're conceding a lot of these points. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he goes, well, they're going to have to concede that they didn't follow their rules. They're going to have to concede that the grounds that they expelled you on weren't there.
That's the secretary of the Tonga NRL, William Edwards, speaking there. And still with sport and some recognition for Fijian players in the World Rugby Sevens Series Awards for 2020.
Yeah, recognition for Fiji, the men's team, and for Fijiana, the women's team. Napoleone Bolatha and Amniasi Tuamamba have been chosen in the men's dream team. And Bolatha has also won the Men's Pressure Play Award for his try in Fiji's Cup final win over South Africa in Sydney back in February. Seems a long time ago now. And congratulations are in order for the entire Fiji women's squad after they won the Momentum Tracker Award. What this means is they've been recognised as the team that has shown the greatest capacity for improvement over the whole season. So that looks good for next year, providing we have a tournament, of course.
Yes, what a wonderful award. Richard, thank you so much for those updates.
No problem.
ABC Australia iView is a free video streaming service from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation for users around the world. The ABC Australia iView app is available for download on iOS and Android devices. ABC Australia iView has content that will keep you in touch with what is happening in Australia.
We simply want to say to you, Australia, thank you. Keep doing it. You're saving lives and you're saving livelihoods.
As well as comedy, entertainment, education and English language learning content. You can also stream the ABC News Channel live through your device using this app. So to watch great ABC programs like Four Corners Foreign Correspondent and Gardening Australia, download the ABC Australia iView app now.
My name's Jordan Fennell. You're with me here on Pacific Beat. The United States government has officially returned more than 100 artefacts, including some human remains, to the people of Papua New Guinea. The items were among thousands from around the world collected by a US citizen and kept in a private collection. And as our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reports, the repatriation has put a renewed focus on just how many other artefacts around the world, including thousands in Australia, may have been taken from PNG illegally.
Good morning, and thank you all for being
After decades here. Overseas, finally, it was time to come home.
This is a momentous occasion.
More than 130 cultural artefacts taken from Papua New Guinea to the United States have been returned. Among the items were human skulls. The US ambassador to Papua New Guinea, Aaron McKee, returned the collection to the director of PNG's National Museum and Art Gallery at a ceremony in Port Moresby.
Any cultural heritage, any item, any art that is not lawfully procured, secured, or lent to another museum is dishonored. And it is important for both provenance and respect for any nation's heritage to make sure that their history and the expression of that cultural identity in that history is where it needs to be.
The items were among more than 5,000, which the FBI seized in 2014, its largest ever single recovery of cultural property. The items came from around the world, collected by an amateur archaeologist named Don Miller. Special Agent Tim Carpenter from the FBI's art theft team previously told the ABC that the artifacts were among 42,000 in the man's collection.
You can imagine my shock the first time I go into Don's house and he escorts me down the steps and, you know, the house kind of unfolds before me, or the basement unfolds before me, and it's floor to ceiling, wall to wall, every corner, lots of tables full of artifacts.
Alongside items from PNG were Native American arrowheads and Ming vases. The FBI says Miller had items from North America, South America, Asia, the Caribbean, and the Indo-Pacific region. Ambassador McKee says it represents a broader problem.
It's a global phenomenon. I've heard of other collections in other countries, and so it's not unique to the United States. What is, I think, positive about the United States is that our Federal Bureau of Investigation is doing something about it.
Among the items that were returned to PNG were ceremonial masks, traditional drums, axes, and daggers. The museum director, Dr. Andrew Mautu, says some of the clay faces in the collection have skulls underneath them. He says one is linked to the story of two brothers who underwent an initiation ceremony together in the Sepik region.
The initiation period runs from about 6 weeks to 3 months. And at the time they were in there, one of the brothers died. But it's a top secret. What happens inside there, you cannot tell anyone else. So they delayed coming out of these initiates until they were able to get back his skull from the grave.
Dr. Mautu says colonial administrators introduced laws in 1913 to try to stop people removing artifacts from PNG after extensive plundering.
European museums are littered with pieces that have been taken out of Papua New Guinea under the power of colonial presence.
He thinks those laws now need to be strengthened and adapted to protect cultural intellectual property in the modern age.
They have now lived up their age, and we possibly need to revisit these laws and perhaps also incorporating contemporary concerns about the crossing over of intellectual and cultural property in new hybrid spaces these days.
The museum hopes to put together a special exhibition of the returned items in the future.
That was our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reporting there.
Big Ideas on Radio Australia.
Do you trust a computer to make potentially life-changing decisions? Decisions about your eligibility for a loan, a welfare benefit, parole, or a job interview. You're on the receiving end of that decision-making process. Do you know how the computer made the decision or the information it used to decide yes or no?
Big Ideas explores some of the monumental challenges of our time.
The fundamental issue which we face, which is extraordinary technological breakthroughs which could enable us to deliver huge benefits to human welfare and to solve problems like climate change, but an uncertainty as to whether we will be clever enough to use these technological breakthroughs to achieve what we are capable of achieving.
Big Ideas on Radio Australia.
My name is Jordan Fennell. You're with me here on Pacific Beat. There's been a spike in drownings in Fiji in recent weeks, bringing water safety to the forefront as children and families head into school holidays. The police say 31 people have drowned this year, up from 25 over the same period in 2019, with 8 deaths in the last 3 weeks alone, and many of the victims have been young children. Let's Swim Fiji, funded by Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs, is a grassroots program that sets out to teach children and adults the basics of swimming and water safety. To tell us more, we're joined by Fiji Swimming Operations Manager Treza Chirden, who's also oversees Let's Swim Fiji. Bula Treza.
Bullet zone.
Teresa, firstly, to have 8 drownings in just 3 weeks feels like a really high number. What do you make of it?
That is really shocking, and we're really sad about what has happened. We're trying our best to reach out to the communities and through the schools and our community work, but yet this still happens over and over again, and most of these drownings happen out of ignorance and negligence.
And in Fiji, is it common for both kids and adults to not know how to swim?
It is common, but in Fiji, the mindset here is that swimming is not really that important. It is it's just like, oh, we know how to swim with a little bit of doggy paddle and just keeping afloat. And to them, that's just knowing how to swim. And we're trying to change that mindset where we're saying that it is important that all children learn at least water safety messages, water safety, be water smart, and learn at least the basic skills of swimming or floating at the least.
And so if the mindset is that they don't think it's that important, which is quite surprising considering Fiji and other Pacific Island nations are obviously surrounded by water and the ocean, what about techniques that can be used to save themselves when they're in trouble? Is there knowledge about that?
Yes, so that all comes in when we do our learn to swim classes or our swimming classes with schools. We teach them how to float. Floating is one of the first things that we teach them, and why we teach them, we explain to them, just in case they're pushed into the water or they get carried away, at least they could flip and just float till help comes. But again, like I said, we're trying our best to reach out to communities, and the mindset some of the people just don't think that it's important.
And outside of Fiji itself, across the wider Pacific, is it similar, that same sort of mindset that it's not important to know how to swim?
I can't speak outside of Fiji. I only can speak for Fiji. Mostly people we've talked to in the communities have said that they've learned swimming by being, you know, just thrown into the deep end and then trying to get back to the boat or to the shore. And we're trying to change all that as well.
And so in that trying to change that, what are some of the things that you're trying to educate people about?
We're trying to educate people about the water safety aspects and being water smart, in the sense that when it's rainy weather, you do not go out to swim. Keep an eye on the kids. If they're going swimming, please have a buddy system where you go with somebody else. We're also trying to encourage facility holders to ensure that their pool attendants / lifeguards are up to date on their professional development skills in terms of saving somebody with CPR.
And it was reported, actually, that at least one of the recent drownings was a teenage boy at the Olympic pool in Suva. Do you know if there would have been a lifeguard on duty at that pool?
Yes, there were pool attendants on deck at that incident. And what happened was that the boy apparently had jumped in, and he got out and he was playing along the side, and then he jumped in again, and the friends he were with, and this is what I heard again, said that, oh, he likes to do that. He likes to stay underwater for a long time. And then they realized that he wasn't coming up. So by the time they went down to get him up, obviously they tried applying CPR, but that didn't work.
Yeah, that's sadly really tragic. Do you know if lifeguards at public pools is something that is required by law in Fiji?
That I can't speak on. Yes, lifeguards are essential and should be part of facilities like pools, but in Fiji we don't have lifeguards, we have pool attendants.
You're currently in the town of Lambasa. It's not a coastal town, but it is on a major river. And it was reported that a 2-year-old died in the Nakama River earlier this year. And you're currently running training for teachers and community youth. What are you hearing from people in the community about the importance of water safety?
Well, with the workshop that we've had for the past 2 days with the teachers and the community youth workers, they didn't realize how important swimming was until they attended the course. They just thought that, you know, it was something to pass time with, because they come from other sports and they come from communities. They didn't think at all about swimming. They just knew that swimming was like a leisure thing, that you just go and have a good time by the side of the water or play around. until they went through it, and we took them through the practicals of basic rescue skills and swimming, the basic swimming skills, then they realized how important it was, and they're all keen to start swim programs in their schools here.
Well, that's really good news. And obviously, over the radio, we can't exactly teach people how to swim. But because of COVID shutdowns, I know you were holding online courses for trainers. Do you have any basic tips for parents or kids listening about water safety?
Just be water smart and just make sure that you know where your children are. If they're going to a pool facility, ensure that there is an adult. And when we mean adult, 18 plus and not a 13 or 14-year-old taking your younger siblings to the pool. And just making sure that, you know, you tell them to be, you know, not to go out into the deep, and just all those water safety messages that need to come through to them.
And for people who are in Fiji, if they want to get in touch or find out more about how to stay safe, what can they do?
They can email us on our email address or send us a message on Facebook on the Let's Swim page and on the Fiji Swimming page, and we can direct them to the instructors where they can liaise with for their swim lessons.
Wonderful. Well, Vinaka, and thank you, Teresa, for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Joan.
That was Teresa Chidan, Fiji, who oversees Let's Swim Fiji.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
And in an update on the presidential election in Bougainville, we've had some news. And the latest reports say the frontrunner and former commander of the Bougainville Revolutionary Army, Ismail Torama, has secured an overall majority now over his last remaining rival, Simon Damorino. We understand an official announcement from the Electoral Commissioner is expected tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. local time.
Coronavirus is all over the news, so here's some simple information about the virus and how to protect yourself and your family. Coronavirus, also called COVID-19, is an infectious disease similar to the flu. Most people who get it recover after mild symptoms such as sore throat and a cough, but it can be more serious for older people and those who are already unwell. Some people have died from the illness. There is no vaccine for coronavirus, but there are some things you can do to protect yourself. Regularly wash your hands with soap for at least 20 seconds. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid crowded places. Don't touch your eyes, nose, or mouth. If you get sick with mild symptoms, stay at home. Cough or sneeze into your elbow or a tissue. If you develop a fever or difficulty breathing, call your local hospital or health centre for advice.
Let's have some more music. This is a classic, an oldie goldie one. It's Easy Lover by Phil Collins. That was Phil Collins and Phil Bailey with Easy Lover.
Life Matters, weekdays at 9 a.m. on Radio Australia.
Being in isolation is different for everyone, but I'm hearing a lot of home cooking lately. People are asking for recipes, they're looking for inspiration, and they're posting pictures on social media of, frankly, mouthwatering dishes. But even if our culinary skill sets are expanding, what will be the consequences for our local restaurants or takeaway outlets?
I think, you know, when people have been given the time to, you know, cook more at home and learn how to cook at home, and then on top of the fact that, you know, the economy's literally in a bit of trouble and money's pretty tight everywhere, they might see a dip in future trade. You know, the average customer that used to come, you know, once or twice a month may now only come once a month. Definitely, I think that will be an influx of people as soon as the restrictions get lifted. And I think it will definitely be a bit of a struggle moving forward till the economy stabilises.
Life Matters, weekdays at 9 a.m. on Radio Australia.
My name is Jordan Fennell. You're with me here on Pacific Beat. A village on Tanna Island in Vanuatu has developed a traditional song and dance to ward off the coronavirus pandemic. It's a sign that news about COVID-19 and its health risks is reaching Vanuatu's most remote communities. But as Priyanka Srinivasan reports, health authorities fear that these custom performances are also spreading misinformation about the coronavirus.
I really want you to listen to this song and take its message into your heart. In this dance, we are singing about coronavirus. It's a sickness that's coming to our ocean countries. The song says coronavirus can come to Vanuatu. It is in China and America, and it can come to Vanuatu.
Chief Trini is from a village on the island of Tanna in Vanuatu's south. He says his people created this song to protect themselves against COVID-19, and he claims spirits gave it to musicians in the village. The people in his community still use their ancient traditions or customs in their everyday life.
In Vanuatu, the spirit gives songs to our people so that they can sing it to make sure this coronavirus illness, it stays in all these big countries and doesn't come here to Vanuatu. It's a dance to protect our people. It's words to protect Vanuatu.
Isabella Charlie from the NGO Care International actually travelled to Chief Trini's village earlier this year. She was part of efforts by the local provincial government to get information about the pandemic into communities.
Care was part of the team that went out to communities around Tanna. We helped coordinate trips going out to White Sands community just to put out messages on about COVID-19.
She says she's seen many remote communities across Vanuatu use custom song and dance to share messages. And though this is the first time she's seen a custom song be used in health communication, she says in some communities where she works, it can be hard to communicate information outside of traditional authorities. It sometimes means people often don't trust doctors and won't go to a local health centre if they're sick.
Those communities are remote, they have limited access to internet and connectivity, but they usually get messages through words of mouth and also through passing of messages through the structures, so going through area council and then to area secretaries down to committees down at the community level.
But health experts say that can mean that important facts about COVID-19 might get lost in translation. Chief Trini, for example, isn't worried about the pandemic reaching his remote community. He believes, thanks to this song and traditions, his people are protected.
We're not worried about catching this illness coronavirus because we can use our local tools, our custom, our local food. Like I said earlier, the spirit gave us this song, so when you hear it, you feel better.
Dr. Len Taravonda heads up Vanuatu's COVID-19 task force. He says they had trouble in some communities who might be a bit reluctant to believe health information based on science.
In Vanuatu, in many areas, not just Tanna, you get this sort of thing where because of they have their tradition, their own traditional beliefs and, you know, their custom beliefs and perhaps their spiritual beliefs. You know, they think that they also have other ways of dealing with something like coronavirus for this matter.
He's particularly concerned that some remote communities might ignore messaging from health authorities and instead believe they are protected by their traditional wisdom.
I think in a way that would go against the message that the Vanuatu government and the Ministry of Health is always promoting. In the Ministry of Health, we normally promote the five messages of we call them five things to know and five things to do. And these are critical messages about coronavirus. One of them, obviously, is hand washing. One is seeking early medical care. One is in, you know, the proper cough etiquette, the social distancing. You know, so, you know, although traditional beliefs are important, sometimes this is the challenge that we face when perhaps their beliefs, they don't necessarily align with the evidence about certain things that we do or we say. And that this is where perhaps we need to do more work in terms of convincing them that, yes, they have their own beliefs, but actually the science and the evidence, you know, points in this direction.
It's a difficult balancing act, Dr. Taravanda says, ensuring on the one hand that Vanuatu's traditions are respected, but also making sure they don't spread misinformation about the virus. But according to anthropologist Maya Haviland from the Australian National University, the two aren't mutually exclusive. She's found in her research that communities can reach more people by using their traditions to speak about modern problems.
In all cultures, that is the work of creative practitioners and artists, is to engage us in thinking about issues or understanding messages in ways that are that really reach you. You know, it's much more potent in a song or a dance than it is in a speech often. It gives people access to a whole set of knowledges and ways to respond that may be really useful in this current time. I mean, in many ways, I think that it shows how these traditional cultures have extra resources and are in fact incredibly resilient in the face of these big human crises that we're facing by drawing on almost like a broader repertoire of knowledge.
Len Taravanda from Vanuatu's Ministry of Health agrees. He says the fact traditional artists on Tanna are inspired by coronavirus is a good sign.
For me, it reflects the fact that perhaps our messages are going deeper into communities and they are understanding it, and they are, you know, they are coming up with their own messaging in the songs that they create to inform others about coronavirus. So it was wonderful to hear the news about these people in Tanna.
But he says his team plans to do more work to ensure Vanuatu's custom authorities are equipped with clear information about the pandemic, so their performances are both engaging and accurate.
We can raise awareness, but it's more important to actually educate, you know, and then get even basic people, the grassroots people, understand the basic principles, the basic concept about coronavirus, so that at least the chiefs and the community leaders, you know, do not promote other messages that would go against what the government and the Ministry of Health is promoting.
Dr. Len Taravanda, Director of Vanuatu's Department of Public Health, ending that report from Priyanka Srinivasan.
Radio Australia now has a WhatsApp. Just add +61437519385 to your phone. It means you can message Radio Australia from anywhere in the Pacific. So add +61437519385 and send us a message. Tell us what you want to hear and join the conversations on Radio Australia.
That's all for Pacific Beat this morning, but don't forget that Talia Olatia will be along at 3 p.m. PNG time for the afternoon edition of Pacific Beat. Stay with us on ABC Radio Australia to keep up to date on all the latest news and developments, and head over to Facebook and search for ABC Radio Australia there to keep across everything. And if you're on Twitter, you can tweet us at Radio Australia to keep in conversation about all the important topics that we've heard about today. If you want to listen back to any of those stories, you can head over to our website and just search ABC Pacific Beat into your preferred search engine and you'll be able to find us there. My name is Jordan Fennell. Thanks so much for your company today and have a great Wednesday.